This episode is brought to you by USAA Insurance. USAA Homeowners Insurance not only helps you cover your home, it also helps you cover your budget, lower your premium in a number of ways, like saving up to 10% when you bundle home and auto insurance, saving up to 15% if you've been claims-free for 5 years, regardless of your previous insurance provider, and scoring even more deals and discounts on things like home security, moving, and storage with the USAA Perks program. Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/homeowners to learn more and get a quote. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Netflix. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Seven-time world champion and modern-day legend Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, finally gets roasted. Hosted by Kevin Hart, Tom Brady gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the roast of Tom Brady live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Fantasy Footballers Podcast with your hosts, Andy Holloway, Jason Moore, and Mike Wright.
Welcome in. The Fantasy Footballers Podcast, Thursday. Days away from the big game. They call it the big game.
They do. Which, now that hearing you say it, It's a little unlike the NFL because it's the big game, but that implies there's a bigger and a biggest.
You're saying that bigger than big?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say it implies the other ones are small.
I'm saying if I'm the NFL, right, it's the biggest game. None shall be bigger.
No,
this is just a
big
game.
Big.
Well, they do put the in there though.
The
yeah, like it's the big game.
Well, the biggest game is the biggest game.
The biggest game is the Pro Bowl. We all know that.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome
in. Did
that
happen?
Yeah, it did.
It's just a whisper in the wind.
I saw Justin Tucker.
Oh, I did.
Winning a tic-tac-toe. Who's watching this stuff?
I mean,
it's cool to see the highlights of it later.
I saw C.J. Stroud throw a dime to Ja'Marr Chase in a flag football game. I
saw Jalen Hurts hit no targets all.
Yeah.
In the quarterback challenge. It's zero.
Whenever you talk about it, it's all stuff. Oh, I would watch that. I just.
You don't know.
I don't ever remember the brain. When you're the huge playoff weekend is done, your brain kind of just shuts down until the big game.
It's not something you carve out of your. Like, if it's on and it's in front of you. You know, if I'm eating at a restaurant and that's on the TV, I'd be like, this is awesome. But I'm not going out of my way to be like, whoa.
Appointment television
stuff. There's tic-tac-toe kicking going on.
Brooks put it pretty well here. Brooks, you said it's like what, SNL?
Yep, you watch the highlights after.
Yeah, I think that's fairly true.
That's sad. That makes me sad. Once upon a time, SNL was, it's Saturday night. Now it's like,
we're old.
That's true.
I can't even tell you who's on the show anymore.
Oh, don't say that.
This is Jason Moore. I'm Andy Holloway. You're Mike Wright.
That I am.
Those are the three on the show. 3 days until Super Bowl Sunday. The UDK pre-sale begins on Sunday. And you can get the UDK Plus, the Dynasty Pass, all of the content available immediately because winning fantasy football championships, it doesn't stop.
Never.
Got to put in the work.
Can't stop, won't stop.
And nobody wants to stop. We want to keep playing. In fact, when I was walking in here this morning, I was glancing, as I'm often doing, towards Deucer's Alley. And Papa Josh is over there. You've got Judge Giamatti, the rapscallion, this morning. But I heard Papa Josh, he was talking to Kyle. And
about
he was
what?
Talking all about his picks in the upcoming draft and how great a situation he's in.
Oh, rookie picks?
No. Was it rookie picks?
Yeah. I got the 102 and the 103, man.
Oh, yeah. And huge. You got Quentin Johnston, so you're set up.
You could turn – look, right now, I promise you could get a third.
For Cuch?
A third rounder for Cuch right now.
I will offer my third straight up for Quentin Johnston. Do you accept?
I'm not sure I would offer mine, but.
Well, right.
That's really tempting.
You got to get out.
So, yeah, everybody's still ready to rumble. I mean, we've got the Super Bowl. We'll have free agency, the combine, all of the draft buzz. It's going to be a good time. Today we have more truth. Is this the final show?
Oh yeah.
He doesn't
only one he, for it's only
doesn't
one for
even
tight
say
ends.
Other things anymore.
Yeah.
That,
did
he is
he
like,
say that? That was just a button, right?
This is you don't have an incentive laden contract, Brooks, where you have to like, you only get paid on days you say it.
He is building a brand.
He mm-hmm. really is. Ohyeah.com.
Yeah.
Go over there.
How many W's?
I think that's a four burger.
Do you have to like register all of them?
Oh, yeah, you'd have to register all those domains. Jason's not wearing a hat today.
Haircut day. So
oh, you got to pay respect,
respect to the barber. Respect the barber, make their job easier.
I had to do that the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
it is funny, though, that after the haircut, I will just be putting a hat back on. Like,
wait, so you will?
Yeah,
you're not
gonna
get. You're not going to show it off for a little bit?
Maybe a day. We'll see.
Isn't
DVD.
That then disrespectful to the barber?
Ooh.
Well, it depends on if they do good or not. There's not much you can do, Mike. I got
can't
problems.
Polish
yeah, a
turd.
Are you on a per hair basis paying the highest rate possible for a haircut?
Oh, absolutely.
Right? That's how you should.
Still going to a nice, you know, a higher end barber.
Why get it cut if you're only going to wear a hat?
I'm telling you, one of these days I'm just shaving my head.
You should just shave. You
do
should,
it, you coward.
You don't need to shave the whole head. Just shave it like above the hat line. So you wouldn't. You know what I mean?
Oh, like the monk.
No, that's a. Is that a friar?
The friar.
Yeah, the friar cut because we wouldn't know.
That's
we
fair.
Would never see how long you could go with us not knowing you shaved your head.
No.
Okay, this has been fun. Quick question of the day: do you believe Drake London will be a value pick in the 2024 fantasy football draft season? He was a fifth-round pick last year, the wide receiver 23 off the board. He finished as the wide receiver 39 a year after finishing at 35. Similar numbers. 69 receptions, 72 the year before. Same catch rate, similar yardage around 900. Touchdowns, abysmal at 2. Targets were the same, snap percentage the same. He's 22 years old. To say he's a value would be to say that he will be undervalued by the majority of people. And
looks like his early best ball ADP is wide receiver 27.
So,
which that's the degenerates. Shout out to the degens out there already doing best ball.
I think my opinion is that Drake London will be a top 24 wide receiver next year.
Okay. We like that.
But like 23, 24. So value off of that 27 draft spot, barely.
Well, that's fine. The thing for Drake London is he's still, we're going into year three. I think I've seen enough to know this is a player who in the right circumstance could be incredible. I think that he is an excellent wide receiver. He has dealt with bad quarterback play for his 2 years. He's dealt with a coach who it was extremely frustrating and not using his best players as the focal point of the offense more often than not. But what I loved, you know, Raheem Morris, the new coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and you always got to be careful with these types of things. But still, for that press conference to say, well, you know, what excites you about the potential of the Falcons offense? He goes, Drake London,
yeah,
you're like. For a head coach
he
to just
one more,
yeah, he Bijan as
thank
well.
Thank you.
Yes, but for him to just come out right and say it of like I've seen this player, and it feels like in him just saying Drake London, he said I've watched Drake London. He has been criminally underutilized, and I'm going to figure out how to unleash him.
Yeah, I mean those weren't
yeah
those were the
not mentioned.
those were the assumed words, but you know the way that I view. Drake London, he's obviously flashed. You watch the film and you go, oh, he's a good one. You haven't watched him and been like, man, he makes a lot of mistakes. He should have got that ball. He should have broke that tackle. His opportunities weren't great, and his quarterbacks aren't great. Right now, under contract, are Taylor Heinicke and Desmond Ridder. They're both under contract in 2024. I don't know that they're going to go out and find someone else. And if the quarterback doesn't change, I do not believe that Drake London is going to have a great year. So will he be a value? Probably not. That being said, when you're 22 years old and you're that talented, if you're talking about drafting him as the wide receiver 27, it's not a bad chance to just take a young, explosive athlete that still has a path towards breaking out.
He is in the category of some of the few players that could have a breakout season, like a big breakout season.
Yes.
You know the Heisman House commercials? You've seen those?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, because apparently all the Heisman winners, they all live together in a big house.
Yeah.
There is another house. I don't know if you knew this.
Oh, let me hear.
It's not as nice of a house. It's where Terry McLaurin lives. It's where DJ Moore used to live many years.
It's like a two-bedroom.
It's beat up. There's mold. And I do worry that Drake London may move in. Because we're talking the exact same way that we talked about Terry McLaurin.
100%.
Which is, I don't like his quarterback. We know the talent is there. He always makes big plays. And then you're just like playing. It's like the record is on repeat, right? And so we're not close enough to where you would ever say Drake London can't break out. But I think Jason's right. I mean, what are your odds? Your odds are rookie quarterback or existing quarterback.
Which the GM has said, essentially, it's not Ridder.
Okay, so Taylor Heinicke, rookie, or they go hard after, you know, some other option. And
you're going to say Russell Wilson, and that's not great.
That's not great. There's been rumors of Justin Fields, who obviously did support DJ Moore enough this last year. I don't know that that's great. Obviously, if they were to go get a Kirk Cousins, I'd be all over Drake London. I'd be thrilled.
He would not be a value. Because his ADP
would
skyrocket.
A good fantasy asset.
It's not the house of hope, Brooks. It's the house of false hope. That's the house.
There it is.
And DJ Moore, I mean, he packed his bags, right? Is he out front the house now? Is waiting to be picked up?
Yeah, he's waiting on
the
Uber.
Did he move out?
He's waiting on the Uber, but he is no longer inside that little apartment.
That's what I think. Yeah. So Terry McLaurin gets the master suite of that home.
Come on.
Help
our guy out.
But Drake London is a legit. All he needs is targets. Like, if you gave Drake London 150 targets.
I still think they need to be good targets.
Well, but
150
just
Ridder targets.
Just extrapolating what he did this year, at least you'd be sitting there at 85, 90 receptions, 1,200 yards.
Yeah. That is
the
fair.
Touchdowns are not coming without a better quarterback and a better system.
Yeah. Last year we had a game of 9 for 125 against Washington and 10 for 172 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, not every wide receiver in the NFL can do that.
That means he had like 600 or 500 yards in the other 16 games.
Yes.
Painful. But that's you know, it's hard to find a quarterback. That's what I'm learning. All right, let's talk some news.
News and notes from around the league.
Andy's covering his face and chuckling. I don't know what.
You know, Kyle has a way to disrupt the show sometimes.
Is this the photographs of Greg
this
Roman?
This can't be the same person. There's no way this is the same person. Kyle.
Wow.
How dare you?
This man has
lived four lives?
I'm sorry.
This is terrible for the podcast, but our show doc has. So the Chargers.
I admire this.
The Chargers officially hired Greg Roman as their offensive coordinator. We just talked on the last show about the fact that, we liked the idea of maybe Saquon landing in Los Angeles, and we knew Greg Roman was probably coming on board. We didn't know at the time that it was going to be officially the offensive coordinator position. But Kyle has pasted pictures of his time in San Francisco, Buffalo, Baltimore, and then, you know, he spent a year off. This man has gone through. That third picture cannot be real.
He has reinvented his look many times.
And he got there. Like, he's progressed through some bad times to get to a final visual that's like, okay, All right, this is fine for you.
Haven't we all?
I can't help but notice that the very first picture, his hairline is somewhat similar to Jason's today, and the next three
hats
in all three pictures.
Yeah.
Is this Jason's future?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm not looking forward to picture three. We got to tweet this out.
I guess.
I'm past picture three. I hope picture three was like 2 years ago.
You already had. Picture three is over.
Yeah, good.
But you got to get the gray beard.
We got to tweet this lineage out.
I'm shocked. The third one is a different person. That's an actor. That's somebody else. The Chargers hired Greg Roman. The Chargers are going to run the crap out of the football.
Greg Roman has been an offensive coordinator for the better part of a decade. I mean, this is not someone we are unfamiliar with, and it's not just, well, this team and this personnel. You know, he was the Niners, the Bills, and the Ravens, all three doing the exact same thing, which is being basically top three in rushing attempts usually and bottom three in passing attempts usually. That's literally how extreme it is almost every single year of his career for all those different teams. They want to run the ball.
Now, my biggest concern with Harbaugh, Greg Roman, is obviously Harbaugh is coming off a tremendous run, national title. What if it doesn't work? Because I think it is going to be the philosophy. I think it's going to be what he wants to do at the NFL level. I do have a bit of a concern that it just doesn't work the way he wants it to work.
I think it will work.
Well, he's going to need a running back, and the updated news that we got is the Giants are not expected to use the franchise tag for a second straight season on Saquon. Seems like Barkley's heading for free agency. I personally also would not be shocked if they signed him to a deal. The Giants, but
they have to do something. If your goal that you have set on day one is we will be dead last in passing attempts, you better go out and get yourself a running back.
Yeah, Josh Kelly, not going to do the trick there, and Austin Eckler's probably not coming back. So they have a salary cap issue. That's the biggest thing is that, you know, we can hypothesize about a big signing of Saquon, but there's no money. So they'd have to do something.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL always they've blown my mind enough to where it's like, oh, this team doesn't have money. You can figure it out. Cut things, move things around.
It's $44 million over the cap.
It shows up eventually, though. Like, look at the Saints. Like,
right.
It does get the creditors do show up eventually, but
like 5 years ago, I remember the Saints being like, we're here. And then it's like they keep going. So I don't know. The salary cap keeps increasing. I will say this, and this is important for all dynasty players. Like, we had a dynasty show yesterday come out talking about this upcoming rookie draft class. There's a couple guys that I think are pretty talented. Overall, it's a very weak draft class. I don't think NFL teams are looking to this year's draft class and saying...
You're saying totality?
In totality. In totality, this is, I believe, to be
not
a
just
weaker,
the running back position.
No. Just the running back position.
Oh,
sorry.
You didn't specify that.
Sorry. Yeah. So just... Well, I was talking about the running back episode we did on the Dynasty show that came out yesterday. Make sure you're listening to the Dynasty pod. But the running backs are a weak draft class. And there's a lot of free agents. Like, my point is, for Saquon, his market is better because there isn't, like, a couple of real blue-chip prospects. You've got Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, Devin Singletary, DeAndre Swift.
Those are the free agent running backs available. In contrast, there aren't really running backs projected to go in the top two rounds.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's a good point. It'll be very interesting to see what they end up with, to see if Justin Herbert runs more.
I think he will.
If he doesn't, I mean, it's a leap to say that that's going to become a huge part of his game, in my opinion.
Well,
especially with the injuries he's dealt with. Could it happen? Yes. He is not Josh Allen. I know his physical stature is Josh Allen, but his instincts to run the football are not the same as Josh Allen. And the
physicality.
The history.
The
right?
Dog. Does he have the dog in him?
Is he willing to risk his physical well-being on a regular basis?
Right. I don't think he's ever going to be someone running for 600 yards by any means. But I do think every game will have one or two designed runs to utilize his athleticism because of the scheme, and that'll up him to maybe a 350, 400 yard rushing player. I mean, he's had 300 rushing yards before.
Mike Williams is a $32 million cap hit, which is the number two in all the NFL at wide receiver.
But hold on.
Who's number one?
Keenan Allen.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, man.
So Keenan Allen, a $34 million cap hit, which I don't, seeing it now is like, that could be actually, I mean, that's some leverage for Keenan Allen to come into this team and say, hey, we have a salary cap problem. Why don't you give me a little extension here? Why don't we spread this money out? Give me some more guarantee.
Yeah, they may get some upfronts there. All right, Brooks, you threw in Super Bowl score predictions since this is our last show before the Super Bowl. Right now, San Francisco -2 has been the line. I think it's kind of stayed there. Am I wrong?
I'm pretty sure the KC between, but
+2 has been.
But it has been the 49ers favored. Yes,
I can't. I'm going to go contrarian. For everybody I know on the planet is picking Kansas City. I do not think they win the football game.
Not the bettors.
No, I know. But yes, the bettors.
Wait,
I mean,
no, the bettors are picking San. Wait, did you say everyone's picking San Francisco?
I understand what the line is, but I'm saying everybody that I know is picking Kansas City +2.
So you're going contrarian.
The money is
the
on
favorite.
Kansas City. Kyle's confirming that. KC Moneyline is the most popular bet right now. I am taking San Francisco to win the ballgame.
Okay.
I can't escape it. I just think they get it done this time.
Okay.
So that's my pick.
What?
You want to score?
Yeah, I want to score.
27-24.
Okay. Jay, what do you got?
I've got 24-17 Chiefs.
Okay.
I'm going 27-13 Kansas City.
Yeah. All right. There you go. See, I told you.
Everyone,
I told you.
But everyone in the world at this desk.
I'm taking a big win.
Yeah. All right. Quick break. Come back with the truth. Hey, Foot Clan. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Take a minute to check your social battery. How is it doing? Does the thought of social events make you feel excited or exhausted? Maybe sometimes those events make you feel drained. Maybe they make you feel like you're bursting with energy like Papa Josh. But you might not know why it's at that level. Maybe it's not enough boundaries set up and you're just doing too much. Maybe you get less social in different times of the year or you're working too much. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin. Look, we live in the era of hurry, hurry, hurry. And social gatherings, they pick up, and then you are burnt out. So you got to figure it out, and therapy can help you figure out that self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery so you can enjoy it. And when you are feeling worn out from socializing, therapy can help give you the tools you need to recharge and take care of yourself. I highly recommend that. All you have to do is give BetterHelp a try. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch them at a moment's notice. There's no extra charge for switching therapists if you didn't find the right one. And you can find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/footballers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/footballers.
This episode is brought to you by USAA Insurance. When you're a homeowner in the military community, peace of mind is priority. And USAA Homeowners Insurance is the award-winning service to give you just that. If you have to file a claim, the process is transparent and easy. You can do it all right in the USAA app. And replacement cost coverage comes standard. That means damaged items are repaired or replaced, even if they cost more today than they did when you bought them, which could put your wallet at ease to tap the banner or visit usaa.com/homeowners to learn more and get a quote. Restrictions apply.
All right, Kyle, we have you on the microphone today, right?
Correct.
You and Betts, I haven't heard your predictions for the game. What are they?
We'll be giving them on the DFS and
Betting
podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'll be giving them for the second time.
He's taking the Niners.
You're taking the Niners?
Yes.
What's Betsy doing?
I think Betsy's taking the Niners, too. We got to fade the public.
See my people. My people are with me.
Okay. There it is.
All right. Into the truth we go.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
But more importantly, heads or tails?
I think heads this year.
Man, he is contrarian.
You've heard what never fails.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, that implies you're the public. You two. I think you two are the public.
That's fine.
Because okay. Kyle's fading you.
Yeah.
Now, Kyle always fades the public.
Yes.
In all things.
Yes.
Right.
He is a contrarian.
Yes.
He likes to zag. I guess Jason is the voice of public opinion, so that makes perfect sense.
Right. Yeah, go Chiefs.
That's how your voice used to be back in about
Toronto.
5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
All right. The truth of the tight end position in 2023. I think this is one of the more fascinating episodes for the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We had the most tight end receptions in NFL history this past year. Almost 2,700.
And we kind of felt it.
We did. In fact, I don't know if it got put into our show doc, but I saw the top 10 performances at the tight end position this year in fantasy points. So, you know, big time fantasy production on a week to week basis. 8 different tight ends comprised the top 10 performances, which was Kelsey, Ingram, Kittle, Laporta, Hawkinson, Kmet, Njoku, and Andrews. So the most receptions ever, 23% of all completions went to the tight end position. You had a rookie emerge who is now going as the number one best ball tight end next year in Sam Laporta. Not a lot of people picked that. Some people would have said, you know, they had their excitement about Dalton Kincaid before the season, not Laporta. And you had, you know, kind of a late career breakouts of Njoku and Ingram's continued. But you did not have touchdowns. And it was the fewest receiving touchdowns to the tight end position since 2011. So, and it was by a lot. So Sam Laporta had 10 of them. No one else had more than 6.
Crazy.
And so we had tons of receptions, PPR value, players you could count on. Like I think Ingram is kind of the best example of the season, of the whole season at tight end position, where like he was targeted like crazy.
Especially in the second half.
But the touchdowns, you know, there weren't a lot of them.
Yeah, so I mean, it's funny because if you just look at stat accumulation over the, you know, like the first 3 quarters of the season, Evan Ingram had so many targets, so many receptions, and hadn't really been that good for fantasy. Like, you know, it's like it's almost like how can you do that? Touchdowns have always been the way that the tight end position becomes relevant on a week to week basis. You're always looking for who's going to get the touchdown, and they just didn't come this year. I think that's an outlier. Especially with the targets being up, that it, you know, if targets are more consistent than touchdowns year to year. So I like the fact that there's some new blood in the NFL at the tight end position to say, okay, maybe for fantasy purposes next year, we have more than just like a 1A and 1B and then garbage.
Overall, the targets for the tight end position were up, but in the red zone where the action is at for scoring, they were actually down, where 2020, 2021, about 30% of red zone targets went to the tight end position, and that went down all the way to under 25% this year.
Yeah, it's wild. And to Jason's point, like, I want to take a late tight end. That's what I want to do. I don't want to be in the position where we finally have been in the past couple of years where we're like, well, if you don't get A or B, you don't have one. So I'd rather have a handful. I mean, I think it's interesting. There are names next year like Kincaid, like Njoku, that are going to be, you know, I don't think Njoku is going to get moved way up draft boards because of the finish.
Not way up.
So that'll be a player people can take a flyer on. Mm-hmm. If it continues, it's great. Ingram was a late pick this year. Still provided value week to week. You've got
Trey McBride.
Yeah, Trey McBride is number 3 in best ball ADP right now.
Which is... That's wild.
It's like, let's calm that down.
That's fun.
We love it. But.
I believe Mike, when he revealed this to us, because yesterday he had us guess. He said, who's number 1? We go, Laporta. And he's like, yep. Who's number 2? Kelsey. Yep. And then we went through like 10 names. It was like.
at 3.
You know, Andrews and Kincaid and
Kittle.
Yeah.
No, it was, and then Njoku, and nope, it was Trey McBride.
And then Mike said, quote, that's a problem. But, I mean, there are other tight ends, too, that we're not going to discuss because they had injuries and stuff. But like Darren Waller, like he's still going to be playing football next year.
Sure.
So there's going to be some names. We're looking at the truth. The metrics we're using for consistency include great games. That is 15 or more points at the position. Good games, 8 or more. Bust games, fewer than 5.5. We don't count missed games towards consistency. But Sam LaPorta finished the year as the number one tight end with a consistency rank of 3. First half, consistency of 3. Second half, 4. 59% good games, including starting his career at 12-8-1 for the first 3 weeks, which I think blew everybody away. I believe I traded Sam LaPorta in week 4, before week 4, in our league of record in a deal to acquire Travis Kelce. And it was under the premise of, hey, let's cash in on what I viewed was unsustainable production from a rookie tight end. And
did you regret it?
You know, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think production between Kelce and LaPorta, it was, you know, it was similar for quite a while. LaPorta finished the season so strong. I won the championship anyway, so I didn't care. Things like that.
Yeah.
But okay. I think my regret would have been much stronger had I not won. But 35% great games, only 18% bust. Great against good and bad defenses. Really good at home. 14.89 fantasy points at home, 8 on the road.
Makes sense to correlate to, you know, we talked about Jared Goff, how good he was at home, how good he was against the bottom half defenses. So it makes sense that he threw more touchdowns in those games. And that is, you know, you brought it up earlier. LaPorta had so many more touchdowns than anyone else at the position. That's why he finished number one.
So the question in everybody's mind is going to be, I mean, I just revealed the truth of his consistency as a rookie, which he set tons of records, most receptions, most tied Gronk for the rookie tight end record. But should he be drafted as the tight end one next season? I think that's going to be our debate all offseason.
Yeah, it will be. I probably will be out on that. This is not me saying I don't think LaPorta is good. I think LaPorta showed everyone he's got first of all, he's from tight end university. He's physically everything you want in a tight end. But then you've got the natural instincts of finding the open spot, leaking out at the right time, faking defenders. Like he put it all together, and he's worthy of being, like, I assume next year he's going to have a good pick. But considering we only have 1 year and that he went to double-digit touchdowns, which is not necessarily, we don't know if that's sticky for him. It'll be hard to invest how high he's going to be going and take him as the first tight end off the board, because you would just assume, well, he was a rookie, so he's going to be better. That's not always what happens in the second year of players, especially after a huge rookie sensation.
Yeah, I mean, I think my personal opinion is stuff like this is probably more sticky at tight end. I guess my question would be, one, what does that equate to? Is the tight end one going off the board at the end of the second this year? Is it the top of the third?
Yeah, it certainly won't be a first. People aren't going to spend a first-round pick on LaPorta the way that Kelce was the fourth or fifth pick this past season.
So, it'll be interesting. I'm probably with you in that regard, but of all the places where it can get sticky, I mean, tight end is one of them.
Yeah, I mean,
that sounds like a weird sentence. That's just a weird sentence.
Yeah,
I wish I said it differently.
Yeah,
you didn't.
Of all the places.
Yeah, of all the places.
You had Jameson Williams miss the training camp,
beehives,
the first part of the season,
movie theater floors,
and he's looked better as of late. So with an offseason next year, I think he'll be more involved, not be like that 40% snap player. I don't know that that makes a huge effect on LaPorta, but that's at least a path for targets to go elsewhere.
Believe it or not, the number two tight end, and this is done by total fantasy points produced this year, not fantasy points per game. So that's an important thing to note, because this player finished at 2, but in fantasy points per game, he would have been 6. Evan Engram, drafted as the tight end 8, ends up at 2 in overall scoring, 53% good, 18% great, 24% bust. And you know, the number was that, I mean, 143 targets for 114 receptions. He was, what, two away from breaking the record?
Mm-hmm. Or breaking or tying.
So when you talk about values at the tight end position, Ingram was extremely valuable for your team. This is, I want to do this next year. I want to take the eighth tight end off the board. It is better for my team if you can identify the guy that's going to finish in the top three or four and draft him at eight or nine off the board. That's a great pathway to success. And a lot of people won late in the season with like David Njoku and things like that. So it lets me draft more of my twosie positions. That's my ideal situation. I want to find next year's Evan Ingram. That's going to be the goal. Super consistent. Not necessarily your week winner the way that LaPorta would do it because he only scored four times. But at the very end of the year, it's been back-to-back seasons now where Evan Ingram from week 13 on has been pretty incredible for your team.
Yeah, it's wild. Like they
all their players get injured through the year.
Well, it's like they forgot, oh, hey, we can go to this guy over and over and over. And
I don't think they forgot.
No?
No, because the targets were, I mean, 8, 8, 8, 8, 8, 7, 7, 7, 10, 7. They did it a little bit more at the end, but you had.
That's what I mean. You know, just that, like at the beginning of the season.
He just scored. He scored all four of his touchdowns from week 13 on. He never scored a touchdown before week 13.
Give Ingram the ball. Good things happen.
But they did.
They did give him the
ball. They gave him
the
ball. 100 reception pace, and he had no touchdowns.
And we need more.
Yeah, I mean, if all you care about is Evan Ingram, yes, you're right. He needs more.
That's all I care about.
But he correlated with Travis Etienne's touchdowns.
Right.
Like Etienne was touchdown heavy in the top half of the year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't have two players scoring the touchdown on the same play. You know, my only issue with Evan Ingram, 26% of his total season's fantasy points came in 2 weeks. Came in that big, monstrous explosion week against the Browns where he scored 27 points. And then the last week, you could tell, at least you know, watching, they're just trying to get him the record as they force feed him the ball. He was close.
That's exactly. Sort of. You guys had recorded that show where, Jason, you were debating whether they would go for it. I was listening because I wasn't on that show. But when the record was that close, I 100% was on Mike's side because I was like, they're going to try to get him the record. Which they really tried.
But then the game 13 targets.
You know, the game became like a problem for them playoff wise. But that was week 18. Nobody played. Like that didn't matter for your fantasy teams. They gave up on Calvin Ridley's target per route run situation in the first half of the year too. So that went up for Ingram when they said, okay, this guy's not consistent, and that was a big difference. So right now, I mean, here's my belief about Evan Ingram. I believe that the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to invest a very, very important pick or free agent signing on a wide receiver that they want to be a big-bodied help for Trevor Lawrence. And I think that that will mean that this is the best year you've seen from Evan Ingram.
Yeah, Evan Ingram is very mid to me. And that is how
you just threw a spike through Mike's heart.
I mean, we're talking about the truth, right? The truth is he didn't bust a lot because he had so many targets. He didn't help you win a lot either. He was just okay. That's what he was all season. Didn't miss a game. He was okay for the majority of the season. And
I think that is excruciatingly fair because he did not have a top six finish in the first 12 weeks of the season at tight end. So if you're not in the upper half of your entire league scoring for 12 consecutive weeks, you did not help.
Yeah.
I would disagree of, like, if you go look through weekly rankings of who's actually in the top 10, and on a weekly basis, I don't know, I don't have an actual number in front of you, but it's going to be littered with guys who were, you didn't even think about starting because they had two catches for 5 yards and a touchdown. Over the first, Evan Ingram, 7.4, this is half point scoring, 7.4, 8.7, 10.2, 9.4. That's the whole first month. Like, those are numbers that I would take at the tight end position, especially.
Oh, you
where
said
you
that perfectly.
What?
They're points? Ones I would take.
Yeah.
We'd all take them.
I mean, that's what I said. He didn't bust, but he didn't really help you like win either. So if that's what you're looking for, he wasn't bad. I'm not saying bad tight end. He was the number two tight end on the season.
Your opponent wasn't DMing you or texting you at the end of the week for the first 13 weeks and going, stupid Evan Ingram.
Yeah.
He got me.
Yeah.
That's fine.
He is an important part of this offense. I think even if they invest another great pick in a wide receiver, obviously they're probably losing Calvin Ridley, so I don't see that as a big change. I think Evan Ingram next year is a lot of what he was this year, which is an important part of their offense.
PPR dependent.
And you just hope, I mean, touchdowns aren't sticky, right? He only had four this year. If he ends up with eight next year, it's going to end up as a good tight end.
It's going to be his eighth year. Is that right?
Let me look here.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It will be his eighth year. Yeah, I mean, credit where credit is due. Finished at 2 in overall accumulation stats. His career high in touchdowns is 6 in his rookie year. 3, 3, 1, 3, 4, 4.
Yeah,
so
he's not a touchdown.
The odds are not high there. Because that's not his – his makeup is to – you know, he's a really agile –
he's a short area guy,
tight end. He's not Laporta, but got to give him credit. But we're just talking our opinion on the future. Travis Kelce finished at 3.
This is interesting.
Drafted as a tight end 1, his consistency rank was number 1.
I don't like it.
His first half number 1, second half 6. He still had, you know, I just talked about in the first 12 weeks, Evan Ingram had 0 top 6 finishes. Kelce had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So I got texts for 7 different weeks where my opponent was like, screw you and Travis Kelce.
Yes.
And that's what is very powerful in the position. Now, the very end of the year was tough. 13, 14, 15, 16, and championship week, like the playoffs. This is the first time you were actively hurt by having Kelce.
Yeah, I mean, the actual 3 playoff weeks, he was the tight end 24, 21, and 37. Now, the rest of the season was so good that he ends up as, you know, the truth metric is number 1.
He was also number 1 in fantasy points per game.
Yeah, I mean, he
tied.
It really sucks because he was so much worse than you hoped. He was still Travis Kelce, and over the course of the season, the number 1 point per game tight end had so much greatness in the first half of the season. Early on, it just seemed like, man, I was so right to get that number 5 pick, you know, spend that first rounder on Kelce, but no one won a championship with him because of the happenstance that the last 3 weeks of the fantasy playoffs were basically his 3 worst games of the season.
Now, we have a Super Bowl to be played on Sunday, but he has been dominant in the playoffs.
Yes, yeah. He has.
If you look at the numbers, and I think it's very interesting to look at the consistency numbers from Kelce over the last 3 years, he's had basically the exact same percentage of good games, which is what is that number? Not 15 or more. It's
8 or more.
8 or more. So 75% in 2021, 76% last year, 73% this year. So those numbers stayed the same. His bust percentage last year was 0. This year it's back up to 20. In 2021, it was 25. So last year was really wild. And his great game percentage last year was 53%. That was insane.
Yes.
This year, 27%.
That's
2021 was 38%. So you kind of got a reversion to 2021 in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, we said this. It's hard to, you know it, but like there's no way he was going to completely repeat the utter sheer domination of.
Otter?
Yep.
Otter.
Like the animal?
Oh, he just hates otters. He dominates otters.
What's wrong with otters?
I love otters. This isn't a me thing. This is a Travis Kelce hates otters. I mean, everybody knows
that. What do otters do?
They swim.
And they
but they're
bark.
Not the one. See, I get otters. I get them mixed into the beaver category.
Yeah, they're not.
And the beavers
making
are building.
Dams.
They're building things, and the otters are what? Just swimming up to them and turning around?
They're like, yeah, like buddies.
But they're hanging out, right?
Yeah.
Do they have big tails?
I get them confused with seals.
Ooh.
Otters?
Yeah.
Otters I think of as freshwater.
An otter is small.
Like a freshwater otter.
An otter,
they're smaller
than. Yeah, I'm looking it up. They're far smaller and cuter than
I. Are they in the ocean?
No.
So well, they're,
no, they're.
So okay. Seals, Jason, seals are in the ocean. That's
yeah.
Your. That's the line you need to
okay.
Figure out.
I got to remember that. Thank you.
The singer. All right. Travis Kelce. Next year, I think you're on the 1 year rental plan. You're on the waiting for the expiration. You're on the Derrick Henry plan. Where's he going to go?
I think he'll still go pretty high in the draft, but LaPorta will be the tight end one, consensus. And then Kelce will be there probably, what, third round, I'm guessing?
Third round Kelce is going – no one will have the fortitude to pass on that.
That's yeah, –
I don't think anybody. I don't even think
– So late second then?
Late second, I wouldn't do it, but I think that's where he'll go.
Okay.
It's too tantalizing.
The end of the season was just so destructive of your of all of our view on Travis Kelce. People were like legitimately mad in fantasy football at Travis Kelce, who to week 14 was still having a fantastic year.
It was three games for a player who has the most consistent record you could ever look to. And so if he was, I'll put it this way. If he was 30 years old, you would not even, none of us would be talking about it.
No.
Three games, you would not even mention it. You'd be like, take him in the first round.
You go, that sucked.
So it's three games combined with being 34 years old that makes you think, oh, we're all sitting here with bated breath saying, oh, when's he going to fall apart? That's why the playoffs matter to me. The fact he's dominated in the playoffs, he's probably going to be fine. He says he's not done playing.
Yeah, he emphatically said that. He said he's loving this. Why would he ever walk away? So
I'll take him in the third.
Okay. If he's there.
All right, let's take a break. Let's come back with a player that was dynamic, incredible, and now we're stuck wondering what's going to be. This episode is brought to you by The Deal. The line between business and sports is getting blurrier by the day. To understand it all, check out The Deal, a podcast co-hosted by Yankees legend Alex Rodriguez. Every week, A-Rod and Bloomberg reporter Jason Kelly speak with big-time athletes, entertainers, and executives like Derek Jeter, Maria Sharapova, and more. The Deal takes you behind the scenes into the world of sports, business, media, and entertainment, and dives into the wins, losses, and lessons learned along the way. From Bloomberg Podcasts and Bloomberg Originals, listen to new episodes of The Deal on Spotify every Thursday.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Number four, TJ Hawkinson. Drafted as the tight end four, fourth round pick. First half of the year, number four, inconsistency. Started the year at number six, number one, and number eight. Great start, 60% good, 20% great. Which, that's not too far off of where Kelce was. But he didn't bust. 7% bust games. And then he got hurt. And then he tore his ACL. And then he didn't get surgery for a while because it just happened. So what are we hearing first on the injury front from Betsy?
The injury front is basically the timeline is such that you would expect him to start on the PUP. If he somehow, and he will be ahead of schedule because that's
he is
all,
right now.
Yeah, there is no player not ahead of schedule. If somehow he makes it to week one, you would expect that he would not be at 100% strength. I think it'll be really, really surprising if he doesn't start the season on the PUP and you're dealing with an injured player who's just normal timeline after this surgery says he's not back until later in the season. Like, I could see it being, you know, I think when we did the math on what is normal, expected, that would have been about Halloween from his surgery date.
Let me ask you this, because Hawkinson through the first 12 weeks would have also pushed the all-time reception record. He was on pace for 113. So he would have been in the same boat as Ingram. He also had five touchdowns in that span. You give him another couple, he would have been the only other player above that six mark. We know if Kirk Cousins is back, this is a go-to receiver. And yet you have the injury. So will he be a player that somebody is going to be willing to put on their bench for a while?
That
so that
be...
you have somebody potentially elite when they return, or do you not expect him to return to form immediately?
Well, and I would also bring up, like, over the first 6 weeks, you know, it started out okay, the tight end six in week one with trying to pull up those points. It was 7.5. So, as Jason would say, that's not good enough.
Yeah, it didn't win you the week.
Right.
Didn't bust.
Had a huge week two, but then, like, weeks three through six, you know, you had a four-game span where he's kind of okay. His real dominant stretch there, which was weeks 7 through 12, let's put it there. Those are no Justin Jefferson weeks. Like, he clearly benefited with the target share going up. You had 8 games where he played with Jefferson, 7 without, and 5.6 receptions with Jefferson. That jumps up to over 7. His touchdowns jump from, like, 0.25 up to almost a half a touchdown a game. I mean, so it's like there was a really big difference for Hockenson, and that was healthy Hockenson when Justin Jefferson was out. So I think
Ham Hawk.
Yeah, like, that is a, and that's a kind of a, like, a sneaky, if you're not paying attention to everything, you just look and go, oh man, it took a little bit for Hockenson to get going, but then he was great.
When did they lose Cousins?
They lost Cousins in week 8. So really what you want to look at is those first 5 weeks.
That's a crazy combo too. Yeah.
So the first 5 weeks, let's take a look at the first 5 weeks, and if you extrapolate that over the course of the season, what would he have done? He would have finished with 102 receptions,
okay,
which is great.
Mm-hmm.
863 yards, which is awful on 100-plus receptions, and 6.8 touchdowns, basically averaging 10 fantasy points per game. That's above average for sure.
That's Evan Engram.
Exactly.
Evan Engram only had 963 yards on 114 catches.
But I think Engram, let me just double-check it, but Engram averaged 10.2 fantasy points.
Yeah, so that's Evan Engram. It's not as good as what you hope for. He's coming off of a very late injury, so you would expect when he's back.
Is there a chance he's not drafted?
I don't think so.
If he starts the year on PUP?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in IR leagues, if you've got an IR spot, he's going to be one of your favorite, like, oh, round 8, round 9, take him and stash him.
Might be later than that.
Yeah, maybe, but I will say that if peak health, he's averaging 10.1 fantasy points per game. You would imagine right when he's back, I don't know, he takes a little hit. And if you're stashing a guy for 8 fantasy points a game when he comes back, might not be worth it.
George Kittle comes in at 5, 30 years old, drafted as the tight end 3, consistency rank of 4. First half was 5th in consistency. Second half was 2nd. The second most consistent tight end over the second half of the year. 38% great games. That's a huge number. It's higher than Kelsey. I believe, let me take a quick look. Is that higher than Laporta?
Laporta was 35, yeah.
Yes. So you talk about, like, hot, cold, red, green.
It's what he's always been. It's always been maddening of knowing what George Kittle could do if he were unleashed, but he is only, that only happens in the, some of the time. It's not every single week that you even have the chance.
Three straight
going to be a George Kittle game.
3 number one overall weeks at tight end, a number 2, a number 3.
He's
38% bust, 38% great.
Yeah, exactly. He's a roster construction question of, like, do you want to have a week winning capability at tight end, knowing that you will also get bust weeks that actively hurt you? Is that worth it at the tight end position? And to me, that's a matter of what am I giving up where he's drafted. You know, when he's being drafted.
You were out on him this year, 100%.
I was out on him. He was in the 4th round. He was a 4th round pick. And I felt like the players that you're selecting in the 4th are still really, really good. Now, I mean, he helped people win a lot of weeks. I don't think it was necessarily a win or a loss to be out on Kittle this year because he was so boom bust.
Well, let's go live to the field here.
Okay.
Brooksy.
Yes, sir.
George Kittle is your tight end in Dynasty.
Yeah.
Is this correct?
Yep.
What was your vibe? How did it feel? What was the ride like? Are you buying tickets again?
It was pretty good this year.
Okay.
It's just nice to know that he is a guy you can put in your lineup every time, and he has that potential, and
it matters.
Just kind of deal with the rest.
It's him versus Evan Engram is like
the philosophical.
Yeah, that is the what kind of fantasy player are you? Do you want to just like Evan Engram will be a safer on a weekly basis, but his ceiling will never hit what.
So let me ask you, what kind of player are you? I think I'm in the Kittle versus Engram side.
I would prefer Kittle to Engram.
Yeah,
for sure.
ADP still matters.
Exactly. So. You have to factor in what you're giving up, which is the whole reason I was out on George Kittle, is not because I think he's bad. I would love to have a George Kittle. It's just, would you rather have a George Kittle in the fourth or an Evan Engram in the eighth?
The splits are wild. Guys, I don't know if you saw the home road splits.
Oh, my goodness.
At home, he averaged over 15 points per game, and on the road, under 7.
Wow.
So draft,
he's a hype man.
This, you get,
he likes the crowd.
You get two tight ends is what you do. And you just play George Kittle when he's at home.
David Njoku came in at 6, guys. He was 6th in consistency, but over the second half of the year, he was number 1.
Oh, man, that
he
finish.
Was so good.
Tight end 2-2-3-3.
Yeah, the last 4 weeks was an unbelievable finish, but really from week 7 on, which is crazy, right? 7 on, he was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
9.2 targets per game in that stretch. 6-plus receptions in 6 of the final 7 games. Had to deal with 4 quarterbacks over the course of the entire year, and yet delivered really an impressive, meaningful fantasy finish. First in yards after catch. I mean, he caught every crossing route he caught, he would just run wild.
He was really hard to tackle for these guys. And the neat thing about him, he's a big, strong guy that can break tackles. But oftentimes when he caught the ball, it wasn't him breaking tackles. It's him just running away from guys. He's a supreme athlete. He's still very young. Even though he's been in the league, this upcoming season will be his 8th, like Evan Engram. They came in together. But he was drafted as like a 12-year-old man-child back 8 years ago. So it's neat to see him break out. I think his breakout was so dominant that as an organization, as a coaching staff, you say, how can we get him part of this game
focal
plan? Every
point.
Focal point of the offense. I will be much more in on him than I thought I would be based on how he played with Deshaun Watson, because he wasn't as good with Watson. You know, he dealt with 4 theoretically inferior quarterbacks than Voldemort later in the season, but he was better with them. You're talking 7
fantasy
points.
He was better with Flacco, right?
Yes.
He was good even in non-Flacco games. 10.6 fantasy points per game without Deshaun Watson, 7.1 fantasy points with Deshaun Watson.
I'd be curious what those numbers were
the
non-Flacco.
Run,
but
say the month run where he gave you Kyle's showing the 5th best final 4 game span for a tight end over the last decade, where he was 2-2-3-3. Those were all Joe Flacco games. So that's the real question, Jason. You think you laid it out? Did he force the organization to figure something out? Because it will still take a bit of a leap of faith. Because none of the dominance was with Watson.
He had 123 targets this year, which was more than 30 above his career high.
And the dude burnt his face off.
He had 23.
That's right.
We forgot about that.
He had 23 receptions.
That's a man.
More than his career high. He had his career high in receiving yards. He had his career high in receiving touchdowns.
I do think he...
And he burnt his face off.
I do think he created himself as a focal point of this offense.
Okay.
I can't imagine you do what he did down the stretch, and you come into the next season where you really do need weapons still. You've got Cooper, but you know Elijah Moore showed he's just not that guy.
Oh, my gosh.
They don't have another guy. It's those
most
two
annoying players in the NFL. Elijah Moore is on the upper. Let me ask you this. No draft consideration. You just have to put one of them on your team next year. and lock him in your tight end spot. George Kittle, David Njoku.
No draft cost. I'll take.
No, draft cost.
I'll still go Kittle.
Okay. Just wanted to see where that buzz was. Cole Kmet finished at 7.
Look at that.
Consistency rank of 11. First half of the year, he was 7th in consistency. Second half, 18. Against all odds. Busted 29% of the time. Good 41%. Great 12%. Honestly, I feel like Cole Kmet was one of the least talked about players in fantasy this past year.
Yeah.
Because the lows at times were very low. Dealt with some injury. So people didn't play him even on weeks when he did perform. Like the Arizona game, you know, he was banged up going into it. Ends up at number 5 on the week. I don't know how many people had him in the lineup. Justin Fields missed time. Saw a ton of red zone targets. And honestly, the Cole Kmet discussion, like, I feel like we have to just tell you what happened and then wait to have the discussion. We don't know who the quarterback's going to be. We don't know if they're going to invest. They have 2 high picks. So if you tell me next year you're going in with, you know, Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze.
Right,
right.
Cole Kmet, we're probably going to be out.
I believe the important takeaway from Cole Kmet, even though he wasn't a great fantasy asset this year from how things played out, he still actually impressed me on the field film-wise. He had some big boy man-style catches, especially around the end zone. And so, yeah, we don't know what the entire organization looks like going next year, what his target competition is. But I rose on Cole Kmet. Like, I rose a little bit in just how I think of him as a player, as a talent. And so, that I mean, that's really the only thing you can do right now is judge, do you think he's good? Do you think he's talented? Do you think he's capable if given the opportunity? Or is he just a guy? And I went more from just a guy to, I think he's pretty talented.
Jake Ferguson at 8, 25 years old, was not drafted, so he was a great value.
He's a guy I'm going to be drafting next year everywhere.
Interesting.
I think he'll be left for dead, or at least be like the tight end 10. He'll be in the late rounds.
I don't even know how. I it's good to hear that because I don't know how to think about him. I really don't. Like, Jake Ferguson, is he... Like, focal point is not the word I'm ever going to relate to Jake Ferguson.
Well, not when you got CeeDee Lamb.
Well, yeah, and I just feel like...
he was actually...
He just feels like the guy you end up eventually throwing the ball to, is how it felt.
Yeah, I mean, he had 102 targets, and I can say that, you know, I had this experience. It wasn't always great, but I had Ferguson for a lot of the season in our primary league, and I'd pay attention and be watching those games, and high-value targets were there.
25 red zone targets. It led the tight end position.
Yeah, I mean, I he was looked to, and it didn't always connect. It didn't always work, and maybe that's just how it will forever be. But when I watched, I was like, I am happy to have this role in Dak's team. That's basically how I view it.
Cheap Ingram?
Yeah, cheap Ingram. Exactly.
In terms of somebody you lock in every week, and you're like, I've got my tight end position figured out. It might not win me the week, but I can go find my upside elsewhere.
Exactly right, and it costs you nothing, and I think there's higher touchdown upside with Ferguson, who got red zone targets, and versus Ingram, who's never scored touchdowns, and I would give me Dak over, give me expensive Trevor Lawrence this year.
It was very nice. It was Ferguson's first year as a starter. His rookie season, he played 37% of the snaps. He had 22 targets. So he was put into a role as a second-year player that he can still get better as an actual player. Now, the Cowboys did take Luke Schoonmaker, a.k.a. the Schoonman, in the second round this past year.
8 receptions as a rookie.
Yeah. I'm not saying that the Schoonman is definitely coming for Ferguson's job, but it's a – at least there is a high draft capital pick who could be in competition. I think Ferguson is his job. So I'm more on Jason's side of the, like, right now, tight end 10 in best ball, touchdown upside every single week. He's an interesting player.
It seems like this role in Dallas's offense is to be the tight end 8 to 10. Dalton Schultz the year before was the tight end 10. Ferguson ends up at tight end 8.
Old man Witten was always still there.
Yeah, it's not going to be prolific, but it's not going to let you down. At number 9, we have much more excitement. It's Trey McBride. Trey McBride finished at 9, consistency of 10, but in the second half was a consistency of 3. He took over. Zach Ertz was waived. His pace from week 6 on was 103 receptions, over 1,000 yards, and 4 touchdowns.
Well, in the first 5 weeks, he was barely a part of this offense when Zach Ertz was there. He played 39% of the snaps in the first 5 weeks, and basically was, I mean, he had a grand total, let me count them here through those weeks, 8 receptions through 5 weeks. And then he was like, hey, let's get that guy on the field.
The worry I have with Trey McBride is the draft price.
I agree.
Like it was a prolific week 6 on, but you know, 100 receptions, 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns. Will Arizona score a lot next year? What is the potential touchdown totals for Trey McBride? You know, Trey McBride next year or David Njoku, no draft consideration.
Oh, easily Trey McBride.
Trey McBride.
So there you go. Just because of the PPR value, you think he's going to catch more passes?
It's and the quarterback.
Yeah, so once Kyler returned, he was on pace for 112, 1,143 yards. Still only 4 touchdowns, but the touchdowns can go up. It's just the fact that Trey McBride can take over games where we'll see how the NFL draft goes. The chalk of the draft right now is Marvin Harrison Jr. ends up as an Arizona Cardinal, and by all the chatter out there, he is essentially a day one alpha. You just put him out there, and that's, you know, what the draft people are saying about Marvin Harrison. But to have, even if that happens, if Trey McBride is clearly the number two target for the Arizona Cardinals and a player who can actually take over, where most tight ends can't take over a game, so that's what the interesting thing is. That's why people are drafting him, as we said, as the tight end 3 right now in best ball, because the upside is massive. But he is going to – he's one of my favorite players right now, but that is that's a rich ADP. Like, you're making a really, really big bet.
Yeah, and this isn't a player that came out of nowhere. Last year, he was a rookie tight end. He did nothing. But he was the first drafted NFL tight end.
A round 2 pick.
Not just round 2. He was pick number.
Oh, he's destined for greatness.
He's destined for this show. T. McBee. So, I like his talent, his opportunity, and his breakout.
Kittle or McBride?
McBride.
Dalton Schultz finishes at 10 for the second consecutive year. He was last year's tight end 10. He's this year's tight end 10. You know, pretty good season, pretty good run, had some injuries. But if you look at, you know, if you isolate it a bit to weeks 4 through 12, it was a really good run. He was a consistency rank of 8. He got it done. I don't know how involved he was on a lot of fantasy squads, but from weeks 4 through 11, he was the tight end 3 in fantasy points per game. And C.J. Stroud obviously elevated everybody in Houston, 47% good, 13% great, 40% bust.
Well, and it's TBD because Dalton Schultz was on a one-year deal, so we'll see where he actually ends up. I believe, right, Kyle?
Yes, he is. Yeah. He is a free
agent. Baby, come back.
So it seems like
Dallas is what I'm hearing. No, I'm just kidding.
It seems like this is a situation where the team and the player can work it out.
100. I mean, if he comes back, I'm very interested. If he goes somewhere else and doesn't have C.J. Stroud,
It's so funny because you just said what you said last year.
Yes.
You were like, if he comes back to Dallas, I'm very interested.
Yep. Yeah.
If he goes to Houston with a rookie quarterback, not interested in Dalton Schultz. The truth is he's the
I don't blame the process.
He's a quarterback's best friend. I remember being the one fighting you guys a little bit about Dalton Schultz this past offseason.
Yeah, and by the end of week 3, me and Jay were just...
Yeah, you were singing songs.
We were burying him into the ground.
12 was Mark Andrews, just some other names to throw out there. Mark Andrews was number 2 in consistency.
Mark Andrews is still great.
Mark Andrews, very good. I will mention, I believe Isaiah Likely is very good. So that was part of the discussion before the season. Isaiah Likely is a... if Isaiah Likely was alone in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He finished the year at 4.4, 2.8. That was fantasy finishes. Like, he'd be inside the top 6.
Yes.
So when you have a player that is 23 years old emerging, and then you have a player that has not been necessarily able to always stay on the field, even though he is very, very good. I just want that conversation to be in the back of your head. Mark Andrews finished at 4-5-1-4 before this year with the injuries. Points per game wise, he was right there again.
Yeah, he was 11.3. Travis Kelce was 11.5.
So, you know, I don't know if you're going to factor Isaiah Likely into anything next year or not. I don't know if that'll be a difference maker if you're, like, right on the edge with two players.
Yeah.
Like, if you're sitting Trey McBride and Mark Andrews, is Likely going to factor into you?
I don't think so. I think Likely will be involved, but I don't think it necessarily siphons away from Andrews. I think it's just a newer weapon in the offense. They have a real wide receiver problem with Bateman and Odell Beckham.
Goddard came in at 14, consistency of 15. Really a lost year for Goddard, and maybe we retire him.
Yeah.
I think it's not always, you know, there's hot and cold, and then there's Goddard, which is like, it's not red light, green light. It's like red light, red light, yellow light, red light,
green
light.
There's a lot of yellow, a lot of yellow lights there.
Which is just enough to get through.
He's following in the footsteps of Zach Ertz for the Eagles, which is become a guy who can catch the ball and fall down.
You mean old Zach Ertz?
Young
Zach Ertz for the Eagles was a better footsteps to step in.
Absolutely. He's following the footsteps because younger Dallas Goedert was really good for a while. And then it's like, I'm just going to catch the ball 3 yards from here and then get 5 yards on the play.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this will be year 7 for Dallas Goedert. He's never finished above 10 at the tight end position. And he's never – this was his – would you believe it's his career high in receptions? Because it was.
That's insane.
Yeah, so, I mean, he never broke out.
Right.
Goddard just – we waited for it. He was an anticipatory draft pick. He did not break out. And his draft capital, you spent – he was a tight end 7 off the board. You had to invest a 6th-round pick to get him, which is high enough to where you probably put him in your lineup and waited.
Mm-hmm.
And low enough to where, you know – I don't know.
Massive. He's bust this
huge
year.
Break. He's a bust.
He's the third receiving option for a team that doesn't have a ton of passing volume, and the first and second option are they're elite.
So much better.
It's not just good wide receivers on the Eagles. It's top tier elite players. So it makes sense that he would never really get the breakout. This season did not make sense to me of how they were utilizing him. So we'll see if. After they're shifting some things up with the offense, maybe we get some hope. But in draft season, I can't imagine I will be calling for it.
You know, if he follows the Ingram Njoku year 7 plan.
Yeah, this is the year.
All right, couple mentions here at the end. We'll have a Tuesday show with our Super Bowl reaction, some mailbag to talk through, any news. Maybe we'll reflect on Kelce's performance in the Super Bowl and what we think then. The UDK presale starts on Sunday. That's ultimatedraftkit.com. You'll want to head over there on Sunday. It is the lowest possible price for the Ultimate Draft Kit, and the UDK Plus comes with the Dynasty Pass with a ton of tools and resources. Did you guys want to talk about that?
Yeah, I did. We have been really scouring through our Dynasty rankings, setting those up, all of our startup rankings, our rookie rankings, getting everything ready for Super Bowl Sunday. And it's just on my mind so much because we're living in this. Even going through these tight ends, I'm thinking about how, you know, they rank in Dynasty, and all that information will be available on Super Bowl Sunday. So you could take a look at all the values, the trade targets, the rankings, so that you can go make your early Dynasty trades and take advantage of those who don't have that resource.
There are 3 updates to the Dynasty Pass every year, which is the pre-combine release on Sunday, the post-combine, and the post-NFL draft. All of our rookie rankings, dynasty rankings, college production profiles, rookie mock drafts, and a whole lot else.
Team opportunity pages are awesome.
Yeah, team opportunity pages showing what every team is going to need this offseason as you prepare. It's a great resource to know what dynasty assets to potentially trade away before teams fix problems and make you, you know, suddenly you're like, well, okay. Didn't expect that, but now, you know, Kenneth Walker is not as valuable or whatever the case may be. So you can watch the show over on YouTube. A reminder, subscribe over on youtube.com/thefantasyfootballers. Click the bell.
It's a nice little wave by Jason.
Yeah. There was a wave to you too.
It was very coy.
So yeah, Fantasy Hitman's trade targets is part of the Dynasty Pass as
yes,
well.
Yes, sir.
So, Sunday, we'll send out some emails. We'll let you know on social media. Follow us over there at the FF Ballers. That'll do it for today's episode of the show. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the big game. I hope it is a good time.
Enjoy your food, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast. Join our fantasy football community on jointhefoot.com and follow us on Twitter @TheFFBallers.